Welcome. The topic today is how New Mexico is using evidence to drive smart funding decisions and improve programs. In recent years, New Mexico has become a leader in using cost-benefit analysis to inform policy and budget decisions. The state is also part of the Pew MacArthur Results First initiative that's helped New Mexico to build capacity around these issues. To learn more, we're joined by Charles Salee, the Deputy Director of the Legislative Finance Committee in New Mexico, who's spearheaded the implementation and communication of cost-benefit analyses to legislators and other policymakers. Charles, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So how did this push for the use of evidence in the New Mexico legislature over the last few years begin? Tell us how that story unfolded.
Like a lot of states, New Mexico was hit hard by the Great Recession. And as we were slowly climbing out of that, the committee's charge to staff was, how do we not go back to what we were doing before, but how do we ensure government gets better outcomes on longstanding performance problems that we've experienced in education, in child welfare, in behavioral health? So that was really a challenge for how do we start budgeting for results? And that's what we've been doing as we've come out of the recession, I think.
A quick note on terminology, Charles. You use the word cost-benefit analysis, I know, when you're speaking with the members of the Legislative Finance Committee. But are there other ways to frame the work that you're doing and the capacity that you're building so that it resonates with state legislators?
We tend to talk to our committee about what works and what's the return on investment, which is, depending on who you talk to, is slightly a different term, but that's what they really get. We want to invest in what works, and it's going to give us a good return on that investment.
I know one catalyst for the progress that you've made in this area has been your partnership with the Pew MacArthur Results First Initiative that we mentioned. Tell us what that partnership has involved.
Really, you know, our work with Pew came out of a legislative hearing we had on early childhood programs. And it was an excellent hearing with lots of different perspectives from providers and researchers on the benefits of investing early. And our committee's been interested in that and supportive of it for a long time. They told us, go and figure out which one of these types of programs are the best investment and what does that mean here in New Mexico, not based on national data, but on New Mexico-specific data. So that's when we partnered with the Results First Initiative. And what they bring to bear is that all of the meta-analysis and research about what works has already been done and compiled into basically a computer program model. So I don't have to dedicate staff time and resources to going out and reviewing all of the literature. That's already done. And we spend our time then going out and pulling cost and other kinds of state-specific information to load into the model to see if we were to implement a nurse-family partnership in New Mexico, what would that mean based on our own population and cost characteristics, whether it's impact on child abuse and neglect, its impact on early learning for kids, on welfare receipt, whatever that may be. We can apply those effects to our own New Mexico-specific population. And so Pew's assistance with training on how to do that process has been invaluable, as well as ongoing technical assistance whenever we have questions about interpreting information or making sure that we're using the model correctly.
And how many staff, Charles, does it take to do this type of work?
We basically dedicated two part-time people. They've built the model and they do the analysis and produce the reports and make presentations.
I want to ask you about some specific examples of policy areas where you focused, but could you give us a bigger picture overview first about the different ways in which this new capacity to use evidence has impacted the work of the Legislative Finance Committee?
Okay. First, we've tried to integrate this results first as an approach, and it's a new tool in helping policymakers make decisions. And we've integrated it into our performance-based budgeting process. And so basically, this is a tool that helps with investment decisions up front. Then we've got a series of performance metrics that we can monitor and hold agencies and programs accountable for the results that we expect to see from those investments. We do regular quarterly report cards on how the agencies are doing. And then coming back full circle, we can go out and do in-depth program evaluations to see how well our investments are working and are they being protected and implemented appropriately. And then what kinds of adjustments do we need to make in the budget in terms of additional investments or policy or programmatic changes. So really we've tried to integrate results first into our overall budget and oversight process work here at LFC. And I think that's helped make it successful so that it's not just something that sits out there on the edge that every once in a while we talk about. This analysis is now embedded in our budget guidelines, and those are basically directions from our committee to staff on how to help them build their budget recommendations that staff are to use results first where it's available to prioritize programs for funding that work and that are cost beneficial and consider eliminating or repurposing programs that don't have good evidence or performance results.
I know that one of the first areas of focus for the Legislative Finance Committee in terms of building a model using state-specific data to compare the costs and benefits of different programs was the area of public safety. Tell us how that model was developed and what the results have been in terms of policy or practice because of that analysis.
At the time that we partnered with the Results First Initiative, we were initiating a big program evaluation of our corrections department and specifically looking at programs and other efforts to reduce recidivism. And that was a natural fit for this initiative because one of the first parts of the model itself that you really need to build out is in your crime and adult corrections area. And so we use that program evaluation and that process to basically build out the model with all the kinds of data that we needed, but also used it as part of our evaluation of what programs is our corrections department using both in prison and out in the community. How does that compare to what the research says works best, and what are the cost benefits of those different choices? And we use the results first process as a benchmarking tool as well. Are we getting the kind of results that research says we should if we are implementing evidence-based programs? And in one case, our substance abuse treatment program in prisons, we found that we absolutely weren't. We were implementing an evidence-based program in New Mexico, but it was so poorly implemented that offenders that were participating in it were recidivating at a much higher rate than their peers who didn't participate in it. The department used that information. It scrapped the program and has implemented a new evidence-based treatment module that the federal government uses. And we're now starting to benchmark that program's performance in terms of recidivism reduction against what the research suggests it should produce.
I think that's really interesting that you're using these findings to do benchmarking to judge programs' current performance and flag those that seem to need either improvement or, in one case, as you noted, termination. Charles, I also know that the analyses that you've done around public safety also led to some legislative initiatives. Tell us about that.
The first is a renewed interest in revitalizing our job training programs in prison, and the state putting more money towards that, as well as the department reinvigorating the types of programming that it's offering to offenders in prison. The other was additional appropriations for adult education in prison based on the cost-benefit analysis that we had done, as well as some other investments in community-based treatment programs for offenders when they return to their communities.
And finally, Charles, tell us about some of the challenges involved in building a culture in state government where evidence is not only created and shared, but actually put into practice. For example, I know that the New Mexico Department of Corrections has not yet implemented some of the recommendations on public safety that the legislature created and that you just mentioned. It's a useful reality check that just because strong evidence is there doesn't mean it will be used.
Right. Like many states, you face challenges that just because research says it works doesn't mean it's going to work here and what will happen to our own homegrown programs in the state. So, you know, at some level, there is resistance to implementing and using evidence to make decisions. That's threatening to the status quo in certain situations. And then you've always got the normal legislative executive branch tensions that exist in any state. and nationally that have to be overcome to make sure that both sides are buying into using evidence to make these types of decisions.
We'll end this portion of the interview here, but the conversation will continue. I'm going to ask Charles about the other policy areas in which this capacity for cost-benefit analysis has been applied beyond public safety, and I will post his answer to the blog. But for now, Charles Salih from the Legislative Finance Committee in New Mexico. Charles, congratulations to you and your colleagues and to the committee for all its progress. And thanks so much for sharing your insights with us.
Thank you again for wanting to learn about what we're doing out here in New Mexico.